Sluddy Sport op Groot FM 90.5.
What an honor it is. Like, this is a legend. Arnie, this is why we keep you around.
Ja, ja, en Sharonika praat nie van my nie. Sy praat van ons gast Dave Nosworthy. Dave, always nice to chat to you and thank you so much for your time. I know the last 2 weeks we had it planned and unfortunately it didn't work out every time. But welcome on Sluddy Sport. Great to have you and thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Arnie and Sharonika. Good to be on air. We'll take the legend out of it, I think. Not quite as legendary as some in the Titans Valley.
I want to tell you, for a man who coached where you did, it's legendary. Trust me on this. That's how we feel about it in any case. One thing I didn't realize the last time we spoke, you must have a great Christmas. Because you not only get Christmas presents, but you also get birthday presents. The 25th of December, baby. Where does that come from, Boyki? You must be very blessed.
Yeah, well spotted, Arnie. Well spotted. I expect 2 Christmas cards from you. And a little present. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, that's a strange thing. When I was growing up, my mom was really good. She made sure every year the family all gave double, so I've been blessed.
That's brilliant. So it's like a hat trick, I guess, of some sorts, eh?
Exactly. Spot on.
Dave, let's start off with, let me get one of the tough questions out the way first. South Africa in their prep for the T20 World Cup, and we've been beset by one or two things that I think, in the greater scheme, probably relatively unnecessary. What are your thoughts about our prep at this stage, and particularly with an eye to the first 2 games against India?
Yeah, look, it hasn't gone well, has it, in the last couple of games, but in many ways, I've said to a lot of people, we in past World Cups where we struggled, we've not been properly prepared in knowing what our best team is. We often go to World Cups and they're all sorts of weird and wonderful batting lineups and different combinations and everything. Where, quite honestly, in the last month or so, I think Bouts has done a wonderful job to sort of get some combinations together. They might not all be working at the moment, but we pretty much know what that top order is going to look like. We pretty much know what our bowling attack is. And there's some good things there. And I think we mustn't be comparing too much right now, knowing we're in India and the World Cup's going to be in Australia. 2 very different fish, those, I can assure you.
Yeah, very much so. So just as you were answering that now, I've come up with a strange analogy. Please bear here with me for a second. With the Springboks and their campaign for the whole year that we saw, they created so many massive opportunities in the 22-yard area and close to the try line and very rarely converted. And as you were speaking, the thought struck me, it's a bit like what the T20 team has been of late, just a little bit. They create these massive opportunities but can't actually step through the door. What is that about us at the moment, do you think? Or am I wrong?
Yes. No, I think you're right, Donnie, and it's about learning to win. And perhaps, you know, we haven't learned to win as consistently as we would have liked. That's got a heck of a lot to do with timing and peaking in sports at the right time. And someone like David Miller in the last week or two, wow, he's peaking at the moment.
Gee, but
and
it's like,
he can keep peaking.
It's like David never stops peaking, hey, doesn't it?
It's Miller time.
Yeah, look, he had a bad year or two, but in the last year, he's unbelievable, isn't he?
Yeah, I know he has been. He has been. You raise an interesting point, though, and how do you learn that? Because I think, to be honest, peaking in sport is actually an art form. And if you've got to make 11 to 15 people peak at the same time, that elevates it to almost a mysterious art form, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, I don't want to get too technical, but behind the scenes in pro sport, there's a lot of insight that goes into a thing called periodization. You want to make sure you're peaking at the right time. So your bowlers, a guy like Jagiso Rabada at the moment, he's bowled superbly well today, I've seen. You had to keep him fresh. You had to make sure his periods of rest and his periods of hard work all gelled into the right timing to be able to arrive in Australia and you are peaking. So there's a lot of science behind it all. It's a funny game, though. There's no exact science. There's always a curveball that Mother Cricket throws you. But in essence, you're working towards ensuring you're trying to peak at the right time.
But exactly like Arnie said, and you mentioned as well, that it's a very interesting science, because you also mentioned that you think Bacha has done a great job. And thinking about how our calendar looks, how the different formats work, I think that has to be an incredibly difficult thing to do, not only for a head coach, but for an entire staff and also for the team as a whole, to actually be supporting. And we've been speaking about Themba Bavuma as well. Mm. How do you rally around a player that's not necessarily peaking leading up to a very big tournament?
Yeah, sure, Nick, it's tough, eh? Because you're really trying to gel a squad of 20-odd players, or I think there's 16 in the squad. And everybody's got a different plan around him, when he will peak, when he won't peak, what he needs, what he doesn't need. And to bring it all together, obviously, there are lots of specialists that will be around Bouch. And, you know, sometimes there's more support team than actual players. You look at the England cricket side, I think they've got 22 people that travel with them that are just support.
I must say, Dave, on that note, I'm going to interrupt you there for a second, but I was listening to one of the commentators on a game earlier in the week, and the English team were all out before the time, and he said, look at the size of that squad. David Gower. Gower said, look at the size of that squad. Is there anything? Is there anyone left in England? He said it was brilliant.
Yeah. Exactly. And then David Gower would say that, because in his day there was a coach and that was it.
Yeah, of course.
So times have changed, I can assure you. Very professional. And, you know, let's take a guy like Themba at the moment and let's chat about him. He's the flavour of the month in terms of discussion. And, you know, I feel desperately sorry for him in the first place. I think there's all sorts of pressures around him that I don't think many people will comprehend.
Yeah.
But he's out of form. You know, it's not like he hasn't been working towards some sort of peaking. But we mustn't forget, a month ago he had an elbow injury, so he's behind probably in the planning process. And I think he's definitely struggled in India, and he's still struggling. I'm looking forward to him getting on some quicker, bouncier wickets. That's what he's used to. Australia will be similar to the Wanderers, where he's been brought up. And let's hope he finds some form, because he's an extremely talented batsman, taking a lot of flack at the moment. And, disappointment in not making SA T20 squads. That would have been devastating for him. So there's a bit of a mental side to that as well. And for the country's sake, we actually need him to start performing.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to be ultra-critical here, but it is worth discussing a bit further and delving a bit deeper. I saw a story from someone on News 24 who went and had a look at the figures, and the figures don't make great reading for Themba from a T20 point of view. His one-day 50-over game is a different scenario, but the T20 figures, I think, tells a story, and that is probably what led to him not being purchased at the SA20.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that SA20, you talk about behind the scenes planning and plotting. Those guys know every little interview. Some of those staff have been out and about looking for quite a while. So you're right in saying that, but for me, somebody should go write an article on News 24 about some of the guys that identify and select Themba into those sides, because ultimately it's not his fault. He's there.
No,
he's
sure.
got to do the job.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm all behind him for that. I know him personally, and, I grew up, I didn't say he grew up with me, but as an 18-year-old, I brought him into the Lions, his first contract. And at an early stage, I said to him, boy, you're going to be flying one day, you're going to be captaining a national side. He was that sort of character. He had leadership. He was one of the hardest workers. And he's a down-to-earth guy, I can assure you. And I really just hope he comes through. I don't think some of the stuff that's happening is fair to him. But you're 100% right statistically, and he will know it. He's not where he needs to be. So let's hope the next month and a half he flies.
Then if that is the case, if you know him that well, Dave, then I guess the next question would be fair. If you were an SA Proteas selector, would you still pick him right now?
Well, I think I would, because the planning has been that he's going to captain the country. The planning, and we're talking 3-4 months ago, if not longer, the planning was he's appointed as captain. So, you know, at the time, he wasn't doing too badly, and there were a lot of signs of real growth in his game. But in the last few months, he's really struggled. So, you know, to not pick him now and say, sorry, get on the plane and go home, will do more damage to that squad who's prepared, who's looked up to their leader, he set the tone, you know, I think the timing would be ridiculously poor. So I don't think that can happen. And it might happen that in the tournament sometime, if he's really struggling, that he doesn't play a game. There's nothing wrong with that. But it doesn't necessarily say that he needs to be entirely out of the squad.
You raise a very interesting point, and I always go back to you'll recall the days of Nick Mallett and Bob Skinstad and what happened with Gary Tyshman, etc. And that disrupted that whole squad to such a degree that there was a massive amount of trust that went out the window between players, between coach, etc. And I guess the point you make there is very valid from that point of view.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things around trust is building confidence.
Mm.
And that's why I'm a big fan of knowing what your team is long before any World Cup, going with it, hitting the ups and downs, because it builds confidence within those players to let them know that you're still backing them, no matter how badly they're playing, they're in the squad, and it sort of feeds around the whole squad. There's a confidence.
Yeah.
If you want to win a World Cup, you've got to be confident, that's for sure.
Dave, the way you speak and even the tone of your voice, you sound like you'd be an incredible coach to play for. Are you like this with players as well?
You'd have to ask them that, Ollie. But I'm ever the optimist. I believe in people. I was criticized sometimes as a coach for not dropping players soon enough. I was always one that believed, give him one more game, give him one more game. You know, you need to let him know that you're believing in him. And 9 times out of 10, you know, they came through. And there's a saying in cricket that goes that form is temporary and class is permanent.
Yeah.
So I was a believer in that.
So very true. And let's be honest, no better an example than the great Jacques Cullis. I think he failed maybe 12 or 13 times in Test cricket and then eventually became the greatest all-rounder the world's ever seen, eh?
Yeah, 100%. Jacques Cullis, in his first 8 Test matches, I think he averaged about 12.
Mm.
And everybody was up in arms calling for his head. And the late Bob Woolmer at the time, and got a lot of respect for him. He was a mentor in many ways for me. Managed to convince the selectors to keep him going, to keep backing him, and as you say, the rest is history.
Tell me how Bob was a mentor to you. What do you recall of him, and what did you learn from him the most? What do you remember thinking, I want to take that with me to the grave one day?
Yeah, Bob was a wonderful man. I've got a lot of respect for him. I sat with him one day in Pretoria, actually. I was the Titans coach at the time, and he came up and he was watching an under-15 cricket week, believe it or not. He was that sort of character that just loved the game. And he was sitting at St Albans, and I walked around and caught up with him, and we just chatted for hours just about cricket. So he was a giver. He wanted to share his knowledge, share the game. And so Bob and I were reasonably in contact throughout my career. And the last time I actually spent with him, quite an interesting story, was in Lahore in Pakistan. I was lucky enough to take an SA under-19 side to Pakistan. And he was the captain of, the coach of Pakistan at the time. And we lived in this compound. And every night he'd call me and say, come, you're coming to my room with me? We're going to look at video footage, because they were about to tour Australia. And he was an unbelievable coach in so many ways. He was ahead of the game. I'll never forget, he had video clips up on the screen of Sir Donald Bradman and Ricky Ponting, and he was looking at the different timings of their backlifts and getting very technical. And he told me Ricky Ponting would not score any runs against him in that series, because they had worked out that his timings of his backlift was not correct, and they would, as bowlers, use the crease and bowl from different distances. And sure enough, Ricky, which was the one series in his life, he averaged under 20 or 25 or something.
My word.
So Bob was ahead of the game, and a massive loss to the game in many ways.
I know that he was one of the pioneers when it came to video work in cricket, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, he was the one that also got Ansi Grenier to pop a microphone into his ear, a receiver.
Yeah.
And he'd be sitting from the side telling Ansi what to do. I think there was a time Ansi took it out of his ear and put it in his pocket, because Bob wouldn't stop talking. He was full of different initiatives.
Talk to me about other coaches and other players that would have been influential in your career and that shaped the way that you think about the game.
Well, one of the legends in your valley, in the Groot FM Valley, is Anton Ferreira.
Yogi Bear.
Yogi Bear. everybody knows him. And I think Yogi, for me, again, as a boy, I grew up playing under him in four Northern Transvaal in those days. He was my captain. And as I came to the end of my career, he's the one that got me involved in coaching in many ways. Gave me a job at the Titans as the head academy coach. And those were the early days of the Titans. So Yogi Ferreira is most probably still, well, he is highly respected in the game. Still, he's still going around the country delivering lectures on cricket and to coaches. He's got a passion for coaches, knows the game like no other, I can assure you. And just the character of the game, you know, he's always around. He's always there for you. And we have a lot of banter between the two of us as we go so far back. But, there's one coach that really sticks out for me in my career that's been there for me at every turn.
And, of course, one of the naughtiest men on the face of the planet. There are very few as naughty as Yogi.
Listen, he's got a sense of humor like no other. There's many stories I can tell, but it's probably not the right time as families are driving home for dinner.
That's a way more diplomatic way of staging it than Arnie did.
Yeah, no, it's that old what goes on tour stays on tour, and in Yogi's case, that would definitely be better because you'd protect the innocent in the cause if you didn't tell the stories, Dave. David, I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to a quick song or two, and then we continue on.
Sluddy Sport op Groot FM 90.5.
Oh, my soul. What an absolute... Like, Dave, you said earlier I'm not allowed to call you a legend. I'm very sorry. I will never, ever take those words back, because I can tell you now, if we didn't have anybody that had to broadcast after us, we would sit here till very, very late listening to everything that just comes out of your mind.
I wish my wife would say the same sometimes,
eh? We'll send her to the recording, Dave.
You know what they say, Dave? Behind every successful man, there's a surprised wife, you know? So
exactly, very, very.
Dave, I do want to talk to you about a very interesting thing that I think has sort of reared its head in the last 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons, since probably the start of T20. The massive sea change in the way that batsmen are batting at test level, is it directly related to playing T20 and getting on with it? You know, guys used to go out and go, well, I'll have 2 or 3 overs to do, I have a few sighters and then I'll start seeing the ball. And then now often you see openers who go and almost go from the word go. I'm not saying that they go completely nuts, but what I'm saying is, has it changed the way that batsmen approach the game?
Well, I think the game's evolving from day to day, to be honest. If I go back to the 80s and 90s, where many moons ago, Arnie, you and I were still youngsters then. Not quite sure about Shoneka there. But in those days, we would play a first-class a limited overs game, and we would be happy with 180, 200 in 50 overs. We thought we'd done really well. And I remember, in my mind as a batter, after 20 overs, if we had 50 or 60, we were in the pound seat. So naturally the game's changed. Guys have become bigger and stronger. Bats have got bigger. We've, in the early days of my Titans, we had guys like Justin Kemp and Gerald Ross clearing the fence there at Supersport Park. And the game's just gone on and gone on. A young AB came through our system and he hit it further. Duplices. And so definitely in the last few years the game has kept evolving, and it's going to keep evolving. And there's no doubt that the youngsters of today, they are brought up on T20 cricket. You go around to most schools in the afternoon and they're playing T20 cricket, apart from the fact that it helps teachers to get away earlier and home earlier. They definitely playing T20 cricket a lot more. On weekends, the schools play 50-over cricket, and there's the odd bit of what they call time cricket going on. But these guys, these youngsters of today, it boggles my mind sometimes when I go to the net and there's guys playing reverse sweeps and laps and all these fancy shots that they used to play, or they now play, and they're so skilled. It's amazing. Mm. And your question was around test cricket, and definitely you start looking at the statistics, and the run rates are four and a half to the over, where it wasn't too long ago, three runs to the over in a day was a successful day. So the game's changed a lot.
Very much so. I remember broadcasting a cricket game. I think it was Australia, the Rebel team, Kim Hughes' Rebel team. Gee, this is a long time ago. 1984 at the Wanderers. And at the end of a test day, when they were at 1.8 or averaging two runs and over for the whole 90 overs of day one, everybody would go, phenomenal batting. Now, if you did that, they'd say, well, were you guys asleep? What the heck happened? So I guess it has evolved completely, and that is fascinating. On the other side of that coin, though, and I know you're not one, but you coach them, the bowlers are all going, it's unfair. The boys have got these massive pieces of willow. They smack us. We travel all the time. It's not fair. Do you agree, and is there something that one could do about it eventually, do you think?
Well, the bowlers today, they walk around, their favorite phrase is, it's a batter's game.
Yeah.
And they're hating us. But again, you know, the skills that are involved to be a top-class bowler are unbelievable. The time they have to take to try and perfect their skill is far more than most, I can assure you. A guy like Lasith Malinga, who played for the Sri Lankan side for many years, I was lucky enough to work in the RPL for a couple of years, and he was in one of the sides. And we used to see him training. And he had his old pair of boots down at the crease. And after practice, he'd be there on his own, running in, bowling an extra 25 balls in the block hole region, because that was his speciality.
It was his speciality, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was known as the sand shoe breaker.
Yeah.
And he would get it right up there. And it was hours of practice. So it is probably a batsman's game, but there definitely are those bowlers out there that have the different skills to be able to bowl those Yorkers, to be able to change the pace. You know, when we changed the pace in the old days, it was a basically an off-spinner action, quickly, a slower ball. Today, it's out the back of the hand. There's a finger on the side of the ball. There's a slower bouncer. There's so many different options that you have to be skilled at as a bowler. And if you're not skilled enough, you'll get punished.
Yeah.
As simple as that. Bigger bats and stronger players. The guys are in the gym more often than they used to be in the early days, and they're stronger and hit it further. So bowlers take punishment, but the better ones, and if they're skilled enough, they'll always shine.
I'm going to feel bad for the bowlers here, because some of these guys bowl a massive amount of overs on the trot.
Hmm.
Yeah, look, you've got to be super fit to be a bowler. And they're different. We spoke a bit earlier about periodization and planning and strategizing. A Kagiso Rabada needs to have a special training plan in place for him so that he's fit enough and strong enough. And there's a very big difference in standing in Planet Fitness or Virgin Active in front of the mirror compared to bowling. Let me tell you. Bowling fitness is the ugly stuff. Running in all day out there in the sun, trying to get your body conditioned to the amount of tonnage that goes through that body in delivery at the crease. And that's why teams have physios and doctors on board, mostly for the bowlers, I can assure you.
I've got a radical idea here for you. And I know I always profess to be someone who loves tradition, and I don't want to scratch with it. But how's this for just a thought? I'll run this by you, shoot holes in my cheese. Is it going to be fair in time to perhaps give bowlers a ball that already has a roughed upside so that you have swing bowling from the word go? Does that even things up a little, or is that too radical?
Well, some of the things I do with my players when I chat to them is we talk about what are the new options. What's going to be in cricket in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years' time? What's going to change? Will something have to come into the game that's different? And maybe, Arnie, that's one of them, to give the bowlers a little bit more of an option. Maybe We say one ball in the over. You don't have to bowl from 22 yards. You can run over and bowl from 18. That will come flying at you a bit quicker. So there's loads of different things you can look at to try and give the bowlers that little bit more of an edge. I don't know if you know, but just recently they're looking, or I think they've made the decision to take away from the bowlers the option to be able to add a little spit onto the ball and to keep it shiny. So the bowlers are getting punished from all ends at the moment. Sean Pollock's a big moaner of it. I hear him quite often in my ear.
Yeah.
And it's not easy being one these days, for sure.
I did see it, and I must say I vehemently disagree. Already as it was, spit was taken away, and the guys could only use sweat. Spit was taken away during COVID. But, I mean, you would know in the old days, the boys used to have the triple X mints in the mouth and put the spit on the ball because everyone believed that made it go a bit, didn't they?
Well, that's the funny thing about cricket. There's so many theories. One stage it was humbugs,
yeah.
Then it was lollipops, and then it was the mints, as you say.
Yeah.
Then suddenly reverse swing it, and some of the guys were caught having bottle tops in their pockets and trying to roughen balls up and not shine them. There's been so many theories, and I'm a fan of maybe allowing in some way some sort of advantage to the bowlers and let them shine the ball and use saliva. I'm very anti it going away, to be honest.
Totally.
And no, I think
totally.
COVID played a big part in that.
Mm.
And they took it away. But there's an art to reverse swing bowling as well without the bottle top. There's definitely an art and a skill. And bowlers are being taught that. And perhaps in South Africa, I've always said we don't teach our youngsters that early enough, because in the continental, in Asia, in Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and places like that, those youngsters at 16 are reversing the ball.
Yeah.
And it's a skill we need to get a bit better at.
Funny, I was just reading earlier on Crick Info a beautiful story about Imran Khan and playing in the second league in Lancashire, and how he instructed that whole lot of them, but he was the big pro, and he went and played four or five games there, and he instructed the whole team to pass the ball to each other on the bounce, and that's obviously another way to do it. So there's maybe something else. Look, we can talk about that for forever and a day. Let's chat about after the T20s series. South Africa is off and they're playing against England here in January, and there's one day internationals on the 27th of January, 29, and then 1 February, and then there's the tour from the West Indies with some tests as well, and then one day internationals and some T20s as well at the end of the tour, and then the Dutch tour here as well, and that'll be in March. But looking at the England series, the Baz ball and everything else that's come with that, England will be tough to beat, even if we are at home, Dave.
Yeah, look, again, I'm quite close with Brendan McCullum and worked with him when I was in New Zealand. He was a young 18-year-old in my Canterbury side. And Brendan's probably the most positive young man you'll ever find in your life. He'll believe you can win from anywhere. and it's developed into this Baz ball, as you say. But, you know, Baz is his nickname. He's a phenomenal character. I'll never forget going in New Zealand in my first game. He batted that, we had him down at 8 or 9. And he came into the change room and he spoke to me one afternoon and he said, "We're batting too slowly." And I thought, well, okay, well, we've got 7 other black caps in the side and they're playing quite well. What do you mean? And he said he wants to open the batting. That's where he sees himself. And he kept on at me for about 2 months of getting up the order and changing the game. And strangely enough, we actually had an injury and we put him up the order as a young guy. And he went and blazed 100 from nowhere. And that's the way he played. And as a player, that's how he played. He's taken that energy into the England change room. They need some of that energy. Sometimes the Englishmen, I've spent some time in Somerset, and their mindset's quite conservative in many ways.
In a lot of ways.
Definitely. So the way they're playing now is awesome cricket, but it can backfire just as quickly, like we've seen it backfire when South Africa were there just a few months ago in the one test match. And it's dangerous cricket. But Barrett is not shy of that. So it'll be interesting to see how they can maintain that momentum or come short.
Dave Nosworthy, just before we say goodbye, I have to ask you this. Give us your verdict on South Africa at the T20 World Cup in less than 2.5 weeks' time from now.
So I told you earlier in the conversation I'm ever the optimist, and I would love to see us in the semis. And that's the nice thing with T20 cricket. You anybody can win. In some ways, it's quite a lottery. It's become less of a lottery over the years. So I'm holding my thumbs here that we sneak into a semi-final, and if you can do that, anybody can win thereafter. So let's hope that we get the results.
David, as always, such an absolute pleasure to talk with you. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate time away from your family. But before we let you go, what are you doing at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm based in Johannesburg. I operate my own business called Cricket Mentor, which deals with a lot of the youngsters, and I'm online quite a lot with some of the international players, just from a mental toughness side of things. Also operate as a director of cricket at St. David's in Johannesburg. So I'm working with some really good youngsters, and I've sort of focused my energies on the youngsters coming through and the changing and ever-evolving game. So thanks for asking. Still very much, though, doing some work with senior provincial players and trying to keep my finger in the pie there, but the days of taking teams probably moved a little bit away from that for a while.
I don't think that's the end of it. I'm convinced we'll see you back sooner than what you think. Dave Nosworthy, an absolute honor and a pleasure. Look after yourself and best of luck. Thanks for the insights. We love chatting with you.
Thanks, Arnie and Sharon. Nick, have a good evening. Cheers.
Bless you.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Sluddy Sport op Groot FM 90.5.